Welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. When you look at the recent history of the Pittsburgh Steelers, it only makes sense that many of the team's former players are in the Hall of Fame. But long before Chuck Knoll came along, and Terry Bradshaw and Mean Joe Greene in the 4 Super Bowl titles in 6 years, the Steelers were not one of the NFL's winning franchises. In fact, the team didn't make the playoffs until 40 years after it entered the league. And that made it more difficult for some of the great Steelers players who played before 1960 to get the recognition they deserve. How else do you explain why it took half a century for Jack Butler, one of the best defensive backs in NFL history, to finally be chosen for enshrinement in Canton, Ohio? Mr. Butler played 9 seasons for the Steelers from 1951 to 1959, earning Pro Bowl honors for 4 straight seasons and first-team All-NFL status in the final 3 years of his career. Butler had 52 career interceptions in 103 games, which placed him at number 2 on the all-time list at the time of his retirement. 53 years later, at the age of 84, he is finally getting the recognition he deserves. Jack Butler was chosen to be inducted this year into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton by the selection committee. The induction ceremony is on August 4th and includes another former Steeler, Senator Dermonti Dawson. He joins us in Studio A. Jack Butler, it's an honor to have you. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Okay, I'm glad to be here, but I'd like to correct one thing.
Okay.
You said 84, it's 48.
Oh, 48 years old?
Right.
That would make you younger than me, and you look and people would believe it because you are in much better shape than I am. How does it feel to finally be going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
You know, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, it's an honor. I know all that, and I feel honored, and it's a privilege and all that stuff, but it really hasn't sunk in. I mean, people walk around and say congratulations. I think, you know, okay. But, you know, I don't think it'll really, really sink in until I get to Canton, mingle with the people down there, and get involved with the excitement and the whole thing. Right now, I'm not excited about it all, really. I know it's a big honor and a big thing, and I'm excited, but I'm not all, you know, gung-ho and all that stuff, you know.
Canton is not far from here. Have you ever been to the Hall of Fame?
Oh, yes. I've been there a couple times. Walked through it and seen it and the whole bit, and I often thought, too, you know, I'd like to be here. It's not a bad place to be, you know.
Well, and I'm wondering what thoughts crossed your mind with all that you accomplished as a player. And what I did really was just skimming the surface of your statistics. With all that you accomplished, you had to be wondering why haven't people considered me for induction? What was going through your mind over the course of 50 years since you retired?
You know, I never thought that way. I mean, I heard about the Hall of Fame. I was never gung-ho about it and things like that. And it would be a big honor and a privilege. I knew that. But I wasn't going to go politic for it. If things happen, they happen. And I went about my own business, did my own things, and I had a hell of a time, a good time doing what I was doing. And now they come along and say, hey, Butler, we're going to put you in the Hall of Fame. And I'd say, hey, great. I love it. I'm going. I'll be there, and I'm going to enjoy every minute of it.
Earlier this summer, you attended the Steelers' first mini-camp practice, and afterwards all of the defensive backs came over to meet you, including Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu. What was that like?
Well, I just thought they're coming over. They said, look at this white-haired guy. You know, he played a long time ago, and they said he was okay, you know. And they come over to say hello to me and all that, and I talked to them. And I had a good time. It was fun.
They feel a link to you, though. They feel like this is a guy who paved the way for us. Did you pick up on that sense of kinship?
Not really, not that. I figure they come over. I mean, they were all the defensive backs, and I played defensive back, and it's like a camaraderie, the same guys and the same business and the same thing. And you come over and we just talk, kid around and stuff, and had a good time, you know.
How much has the NFL changed since you played in the 1950s to now?
I don't think the game hasn't changed. I mean, the game of football is still the game of football. You're getting guys now that I think are better athletes. Some certain positions are better athletes today than they were then. But you had players like offensive linemen and defensive linemen that they'd have a they were good as good athletes as they are today, but they didn't have the size that the players today have. Your offensive linemen today, they're 300 pounds. And you, back then, our offensive linemen were like 220. Ernie Stotner, Hall of Fame guy, great defensive tackle. He played at 225 pounds.
Incredible.
A defensive lineman, you know? I mean, but they were good athletes. They were as good of an athlete as they are today. But the kids today are bigger, stronger, quicker, faster. They've had they've been coached since in grade school or before that, right up all through the high school, into college, into the pros. And I mean, they're very good athletes today, very good athletes.
You know, as you say, the players were bigger and faster today, that they're bigger and faster now, but the helmets and the pads back when you played weren't as sophisticated as they are today. And you didn't have the kind of medical staff supervising you that you would in a professional football team situation today. So how dangerous was it back when you played?
I don't know. You never thought about it. You know, I never thought about danger at all. I never entered my mind. I mean, we had the equipment, the helmets. I look at today's helmets compared to what we had. There's no comparison. I remember when I first went with the ball club. At practice, we had those old leather helmets. You know, the things that used to, those guys used to stick in their back pocket and walk around with them.
You could fold it up.
Yeah. I mean, these were our practice helmets. And in the game time, they had the plastic ones we wore, which they can't compare to today's. Equipment today is so much, much, much better.
The issue of concussions is often discussed today. How were concussions handled back when you played?
I never even heard the word, you know, as far as relating to football. We'd get guys, you know, get their belt, their head, you know, hit in the head, or but very seldom I heard about concussions or something like that, you know. You figure they just had their bell rung and they'll be all right. And
so more often than not, in that situation, a player would be sent back into the game?
Well, they may not that game, but maybe week during the week they'd rest them up like and they play the next week, yeah.
So players would bounce back probably a lot sooner.
Yeah.
One of the things players in the 50s did was play both on offense and defense, and you did that as both a defensive back and a receiver on offense. What was that like?
Well, I mean, we didn't play 60 minutes, you know what I mean? You would play like I was a defensive back.
Unless you were Chuck Bednarik.
Yeah. I played all the defense. Offense, they'd put me in a situation things. You might play 3-4 plays a game or something, but you didn't play the whole game like, you know. But you did the one, your major thing, you play the whole game.
If you were forced to choose to play on one side of the ball or the other today, which most players are, which would you choose?
When I got out of St. Bonaventure, I thought I was a wide receiver, and I still think I could have been a wide receiver. You know, I loved running and doing and catching and all that stuff, but I loved playing defensive back, though. But I always thought I was a wide receiver.
Well, and you did get a chance to do it, right, in a game back on December 13th, 1952, a game in which you had four interceptions. You also caught the game-winning touchdown pass, as I understand it.
Yeah, Eddie LeBaron. We played the Washington Redskins in Washington. I remember the game. Yeah.
What was that like, knowing that you always wanted to be a wide receiver?
Yeah, I mean, you don't really think about things like that. But that was a good, you know, when you're playing the game, you had one interception, you know, and you had another interception. Well, you know, you never get two interceptions in a game, you know. Then the game went on, I got another one. Figure, wow, that was really something, you know. It was great. And one was a walk-on, like, it was only like about a 12-yard interception, walk right in for a touchdown, you know. But it was great. I loved it.
Our guest is soon-to-be Steelers Hall of Famer Jack Butler. If you have a comment or question for him as he recalls different episodes during his life and career, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@essentialpublicradio.org, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh. Jack, you grew up in Oakland, near Forbes Field, right here in Pittsburgh. What do you remember about growing up in those days in that neighborhood, that part of Pittsburgh?
Well, I don't remember. I was still in grade school. I remember I went to the cathedral.
Cathedral Middle School?
Whatever you call it. I don't know what they call it now. It was down by the cathedral. Or, yeah, the cathedral. Now I think there are apartment buildings in there. But I lived on Halkett Street here in Oakland, and I used to walk to school and walk back. And I remember they were building the University of Pittsburgh at the time, the big building right there.
The Cathedral of Learning.
Yes.
Really?
And I remember walking by, and they were building this big thing, and I'd walk through the mud, and I'd get home, and I'd get hell for getting mud, all muddy, and my shoes are all mud, and my clothes are all muddy. But I enjoyed going and looking and watching them build that great big building, you know. And I was in grade school. I don't know what grade it was, but then we moved that. But I don't remember too much about Oakland. I was just in grade school then, you know.
You had a chance to help build the Presbyterian Church in East Liberty, and that's a big church with a big tall steeple. And apparently, your coworkers elected you to be the guy. And I don't know how this happened. Maybe you can explain it. You were the guy that they elected to climb to the top and do the dangerous stuff? How did that?
It wasn't an election. I was the youngest. I think I may have still been in high school. And I was working for this roofing company. And the job was that Presbyterian church there in East Liberty, I guess it is.
Mm-hmm.
Big, tall church. Big, beautiful church. And my job, they put me up there, and I was painting all the rain gutters around. And that's really high up there, really high up there. I painted all those gutters. Then I come down, and they said, wait a minute now. You got to go up and paint that cross up there in that piece of I don't know what you call it, but it's like aluminum or something. You have to paint all that, you know. And I said, there ain't no way in the world I'm going up there. And I didn't.
You went on to your father, I guess, sent you to Mount Carmel College High School in Niagara Falls, Ontario, to study the seminary. What led you to decide that the life of a priest was not your calling?
Well, I don't know. I felt that I had other things I wanted to do, and their life is different than what I'd want to lead and the whole bit. And this is not for me, you know. And I spent four at high school, and after that I said, this is not for me. It's like a prep school, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, no, it wasn't for me, that's all.
So you went on to college at St. Bonaventure, and before then, and this is something that I think a lot of people will find hard to believe, is that you had never played in an organized football game in your life before playing in college at St. Bonaventure. How did that happen?
Well, when I went to school, they didn't have a football team. I never played a down in my life of football until I went to St. Bonnie's. And the only reason I went out for football is that I went up there in, I think, 1947, and these guys were all come back out of the service and different things. And I was put in a room with three other guys. It was a four-man room, and they were all scholarship football players and me, and I'm 17 years old. That's all they talked about, football and spring training come. It was in January. What they're going to do and all that stuff. And I listened. Come January, they talked me into going out to go with them over there to get your equipment thing. So I went over with them. And the guy down in the locker room had a big tablet, and he walked, what's your name? And scratch off and throw you your equipment. And I'm last in the line there, and told him my name, and he looked down the list, and he said, went down again, said, you're not on this. Get the hell out of here, you know. You're not on here. Get out of here, you know. So he kicked me out. So I'm walking down the main walk at St. Bonaventure University, going to the classrooms, like, and Father Silas Rooney was there, which is Art Rooney's brother. He was the athletic director. And he calls me over, and he said, did you get down, see about getting a uniform and play football? I said, yes, I went down. They chased me. He told me, get the heck out of here, you know. So he said, you go back tomorrow. So I went back down tomorrow, and the guy see me again. He took the stuff, and he just threw it at me, you know. And that was it. And I go out on the field, you know, and I'm watching these guys put their uniform together when they're putting the things in their pants and we're just doing them. And I never did this before, so I'm watching them trying to do the same thing. You know? Go out on the field, and they had two scrimmages going. And one coach had the rest of us lined up along the sidelines, and he wanted to ask what positions you play, you know. So I'm standing there, and the guy next to me is a transfer from Notre Dame. He was an offensive lineman. And so his name was Frankie Ferris, and he says that, you know, what do you play? He said, I'm an offensive guard or something, you know. He said, okay, and he come to me. I'm like maybe 5'10", 5'11", 170 pounds then, you know. He said, what do you play? I said, I'm an offensive guard. He said, you're what? I said, I'm an offensive guard. He said, you're never going to make it.
Because you know? You were too small?
No, I never played it, you know. So I'm just standing there for a week. Nothing ever happened, nothing. The guy gets hurt on the field. There's two scrimmages going all the time. The guy's hurt on the field and he hollers. He wants a defensive back. Defensive back. Nobody moves. He hollered again, hollered again. It's defensive backs. I figure, I run out. He looks at me and said, I thought you said you're an offensive lineman. I said, no, I'm a defensive back. That was it. That started it.
And the rest is history.
Yep.
You played for 9 years for the Steelers and made all of $72,000 in your career. How much would you be worth today, do you think?
Probably 75. I don't know. I mean, it's a different world we're in today. You know, I mean, those kids are signed for millions and millions of dollars, you know. I made $4,000 my first year. 9 years later, I made $12,000, most ever made.
When you tried out for the Steelers, that was kind of serendipitous too. We've only got about a minute left here, but how did you end up making the Steelers?
I figured, you know, I went up there and I was nobody, you know. And I figure if they chase me, I figure I wasn't going to make it. I figure when they run me off, I'm going home and I had a deal with the St. Bonnie's. I was going to go back and help coach, and I figured this will help me in coaching. I figured I might as well go all out. And I went all out. I got in a lot of fights and things, but I made the team.
You made the Steelers. That was back in 1951.
Right.
And you ended up with the Steelers for 9 seasons. And now Jack Butler, former Steelers defensive back, is being inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio on Saturday, August 4th. That's a week from Saturday. Jack, congratulations on this accomplishment, and thanks so much for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh. It's been a pleasure visiting with you and having you on the show.
Oh, I enjoyed it immensely. Thank you.
Have you written your speech yet, by the way?
No. Uh-uh.
All right, well, good luck with that.
Okay.
And that will do it for this edition of Essential Pittsburgh. The show is produced by Marcus Charleston. The assistant producer is Heather McLean. Executive producer Tammy Turwelp. Senior news editor Mark Newtbar. Director of interns Kevin Gavin. Our engineer Russ Lloyd. And our production assistants are Ellis Robinson, Zach Kuntz, and Rebecca Zook. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thanks for listening. Tomorrow, we talk about the sewage issue in Pittsburgh. We'll see you tomorrow.